kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining, as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing today?
I have cake.
What?
I have cake.
What kind of cake?
Ice cream cake. Ice cream cake, too. Not just any kind of cake. But I finished it. It's gone now. And I just have to be sad for the rest of the show.
Did you bring enough for the whole class?
Fucking no. That was the last piece. Deal with it. That was number one's birthday cake, and I hadn't even had a piece of it yet, and so I was like, yeah, I'm gonna eat the last piece of cake.
I want cake now. That's bullshit.
Like, I'll send you a GIF of some cake or something.
You with that GIF. Oh, my God. You're just doing everything to get under my skin already. We're a minute into the show. Things are going to go downhill fast.
Fuck yeah.
Hopefully we have someone here who can help bring things back up to a more positive atmosphere. Joining us from Graphite Lab, Matt Rathel, how are you doing?
Hey, guys, doing well.
Do you have cake?
I don't, but I also don't pronounce it GIF either.
Thank you.
Just to start poking that, that one with a stick. But otherwise, I'm doing just fine.
You're a GIF man.
I say it all the time, but choosy moms choose GIF.
And I love that saying, but I'm not a choosy mom, apparently. So I'm gonna have to go with GIF.
Thank you. It's 2-1. Officially, the SML stance is now GIF.
So now we have to have another showdown. If GIF wins, and I can't bring myself to say that, but if GIF wins, what's better, regular cake or ice cream cake?
Oh, I probably have to vote ice cream cake just to make sure that I'm, democratic neutral here.
Does the ice cream cake have the little chocolate crunchies in the middle?
It's Oreo ice cream cake.
Ooh. I've never had an Oreo ice cream cake. I thought we were just going for like traditional ice cream cake Carvel with the little chocolate crunchies in the middle.
This shit is fancy. I don't know. Number one picked it out. I didn't even go over to the freezer. I was like, go get what you want.
Yeah, I'm giving the nod to an 15. Oreo ice cream cake.
Yeah, I was like, you're 15 now. Go explore the store and leave me be.
Pick your own damn cake. Yeah, I'm busy. Pick your own damn
cake. I've been doing it for 14 years. I'm done this year.
Matt is so confused about the show that he just got himself involved with.
I thought this was a gaming podcast.
No, I've got opinions on cake and that sort of thing. I'm current.
Let's hear your cake opinions.
No, I've got Oreo. So the Oreo Klondike bars. Those are good. Yeah. What about mint chocolate chip ice cream? Does that go in your face or does that go in the trash?
I'm down for mint anything.
Yeah, it goes
really
in my mouth.
Am.
All right, good. See, now I'll we're in agreement.
You,
now we can
I'm
be friends.
Step up. I'm going to step it up a notch. We don't just get mint chocolate chip in this house. During Christmas, you can get straight out peppermint ice cream.
Oh, I've not gone that far. Okay. Good tip.
We don't just get peppermint ice cream. This is a Christmas tradition in our house is to make hot chocolate and then we make hot chocolate floats. So you got to make regular hot chocolate or mint. I like to make mint hot chocolate because I'm a mint whore. and then you put the peppermint ice cream in it. And then you put a candy cane in it. And then you top it with whipped cream and chocolate syrup and sprinkles.
Sweet goodness. Okay. That's
a Christmas tradition in our house.
Sounds like a, sugar bomb. There you go.
Ship me one.
I'll see how that works out. It's a little difficult to get the dry ice to keep an item hot and cold at the same time.
Yeah, you can make it work. I believe in you.
You might have to make that one your damn self.
The closest I get to a minty holiday dessert treat is Arby's around holiday times. They do their Andes mint shakes.
Those are my weaknesses. Yeah. I'm a sucker.
They changed them this year, though. Normally, they have like a swirl of chocolate syrup inside the cup. And this year, they're not doing that. And I feel robbed of my chocolate swirl.
I didn't actually get one this year.
Mm.
And I am sad about it. But I didn't know they had changed it.
Yeah. They still have the chocolate syrup on top and on top of the whipped cream. And then they put the Andes chocolate bits on top of it. So you mix those up.
And, those things are so good.
Oh, my God.
Sounds tasty.
My cat just broke something. I know that shit got picked up.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We heard that.
Good job, Gabe.
Oh, man. So, Matt, how are you doing? We should probably talk about your game, huh?
I'm kind of chilling out, right? I'm here in sunny St. Louis. And when I say sunny, we've got about 14 inches of snow.
Oh, wow.
It's about 8 o'clock. So I'm kind of ramping down for the week. I need a boost. I need a hot chocolate with peppermint and, you know, chocolate on top of it, to wake back up. So, happy to be chatting. And, we launched the game last Friday, on new platforms and have been kind of riding the wave. It's been good.
I was just about to say, you really don't get downtime 6 days post launch.
Not if you're doing it right, in my opinion. Yeah. You want to be hyping stuff up. It's kind of like keeping, you know, a balloon in the air. You got to keep bouncing it back up there and finding ways to engage with your audience and hopefully keep it, you know, top of mind, at least for a little while. You know, it's not, can't do it forever, but you will make sure that you've, you know, reached your audience. And so that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah. Well, it has been a week. For the people who don't know what the game is, it is called Hive Jump. Give us the sales pitch. What is this game?
Yeah, so Hive Jump is first and foremost a game you're going to enjoy playing with your friends. It's 1-4 player run and gun action shooter where you control space marines that have been dropped on this alien planet that is obviously infested with this hive of alien creatures. And you're going to control these space marines working together to get this transponder backpack down into the very depths of the hive where you can call in a nuke that's going to nuke the hive from within and eradicate the aliens so you can reclaim this planet for the human race. We render all of this in kind of a retro pixel art aesthetic. So the way we describe it in a nutshell is it's the world's very first Controid. So you've heard of Metroidvania. That's all old news. Now we've got a Controid out here.
Controid. Which is,
yeah. So we got one port Contra, right? That action, you know, run and gun shooter. But the visual aesthetic that we've developed here gets compared to Super Metroid all the time. So sci-fi, fun, arcade-like shooter here that we've concocted. And so far, fans seem to be digging it, so that's pretty neat.
I like Controid. I like that.
I thought it has a nice ring to it. I can't take complete credit. I think it was a fan at like PAX or something that, you know, we were mentioning those references. And they're like, so it's a Controid. And I'm like, yes, it is.
But so
you should just keep that for yourself. Yeah. You're like, I came up with it. Some other guy at a convention may have mentioned something.
Yeah.
The downside to Controid, though, is that it ignores the game's roguelike features.
That's pretty true. So we did take some inspirations from games like Spelunky and some of the other roguelikes out there. But we wanted to kind of put our twist on it. So the way we've done that is the transponder backpack that I mentioned before, this magical device that's going to call in a nuclear payload at the end of your jump, that has to be protected. So as you're moving throughout the levels, if your jumpers die, the backpack will drop and it becomes vulnerable. It's like a mobile respawn point. So if the backpack is dropped, these aliens are going to go crazy and they're going to try to attack it, and it has a life of its own. So you'll beam back in after a few seconds and you can pick up the backpack and keep running. If you're playing multiplayer, if one jumper dies, your friends can pick up the backpack and keep running. So it's kind of a fun mechanic for friends, for sure. Having that backpack keeps you from just dying outright. So you get a little bit of a second chance. So it's really a light take on that roguelike feel. And we think it's pretty nifty.
It's not just a second chance. It's a fourth, a ninth, a 47th chance.
Ideally, yeah. You're going to die a lot in high jump. Over the last week, we've gotten a lot of feedback where people say, this game is impossibly hard. And it feels that way to start. I mean, we understand that for sure. But yeah, if you learn, you know, to kind of manipulate the backpack, or if you're playing with friends, yeah, you might go through a lot of recruits on your jump, but, you know, it's all for a good cause.
I wish I was as good at maneuvering the recruits as I am at saving that fucking backpack when it has 3 centimeters of health left.
Well, you know, we all have our talents. That's all right.
You mentioned that people were complaining the game was kind of impossible. And I noticed right before we started to do the interview, I was looking through the achievements, and there's quite a few achievements that are still at 0% unlocked on Xbox.
Yeah, that could be possible for a little while. We cast the line out there. We felt like this game is something that you could just pick up and play, but that it might attract a more hardcore gamer. Mm-hmm. So some of those achievements are a little ambitious. Yeah, there should be some out there for the true achievement hunter that will be a nice little trophy to claim once you get it.
What do you think are some of the hardest in the game?
I mean, there's some that, you know, deal with completing the game, of the, you know, most difficult, levels, you know, with taking very small or no amounts of damage.
Brutal.
Those types or jumping without losing a jumper, which is great if you're patient, but you know, this game isn't presented as a game where you should take your time. It's everything is, you know, going crazy and the hive is swarming, so you better move quickly. So, you know, it takes some strategy to kind of, you know, tackle some of those challenges. But they're all doable. We've done them, but they're not easy.
I have one for not losing a jumper. I just looked because you mentioned it, and I went to look, and I was like, yeah. I got that one.
Which is great, yeah. So, I mean, they're achievable. It's just, you know, how we approach game design is that it should look difficult, but as you get into it and you start giving it your time, you start to realize that you understand the patterns, you kind of break down the mechanics, and as you kind of develop some of that skill, things become more achievable. So that way, when you do, you know, hit those marks, it feels really satisfying.
What are some tips that you can give to new players of the game who are struggling at first?
My number one tip, and my team doesn't always agree with me on this, but
suck less.
Yeah, get good. My favorite gun is the poison cloud. I like the poison cloud because I can just kind of like drift, like I'm crop dusting, you know, I'm like zipping all around the screen and just dropping poison everywhere. It's not going to blast things away right away, but you can get out of harm's way by just leaving the poison cloud behind you. So if you find yourself getting wrecked in the face too much, you know, save up a little bit of goo, invest in that gun, and it might just save your life.
I have a very important question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you actually pronounce the name of the aliens?
Ordovician.
I was so wrong.
Yeah, so it's a mouthful, but here's kind of where that even came from. So we were thinking these planets, you know, these creatures may have been buried under the surface of the planet for a long time. They may be a little prehistoric. They may be a little bit crab-like. And so we started to research, like, earlier eras, you know, on our own planet. And there was this era where, like, these largely crustacean-like creatures, it was a Ordovician era, you know, similar to, like, Jurassic and whatnot. And we're like, ooh, that sounds really, really nice. So it's a little bit of a mouthful, but there you go. So that's why we call them bugs, is because the other one's too hard to say.
That makes sense. I was about to ask, too, how you even come up with the design of them. So that kind of nailed everything right there.
Yeah, we played around. I mean, we did watch, you know, one too many rounds of Starship Troopers, you know, we're making the game. So that was definitely on our minds. But yeah, it was kind of fun.
One of the mini bosses with the tendrils made me think of the movie Tremors.
Oh,
where they come
up
out of the ground, and I was just like, oh, I hate this thing. It reminds me of Tremors.
Yep. Yeah, you know, a lot. Yeah, this game will put thoughts into your mind of, you know, watching where you step, because these guys are coming out of the ground. There's lots of little trapdoor bugs that come and get you. And so it's, everything's popping out of the rocks, man.
Yeah, they're dicks.
Yeah. One of the original reviews, like, headlines were, they're coming out of the goddamn walls. Which I think is like a movie quote from somewhere, but it's pretty appropriate for this game.
Coming out of the goddamn walls.
That was one of the achievements that I had noticed that was 0% was the one for surviving 10 swarms. So yeah, when those swarms start up, you just immediately know you're fucked.
Yeah.
There's no break from that.
They get pretty brutal. Yeah, there's relics that you can unlock that will reset that, you know, that swarm threat. But they're, of course, you know, pretty hard to come by. You got to be careful not to piss them off too much. Piss them off just enough to get by.
Doc Havoc in chat is saying that was a quote from Aliens when the Marines are getting jumped at for the first time. They're coming out of the goddamn walls.
That sounds about right. Yeah. Yeah. Forgive me for not having that, you know, top of mind. But we were slinging around so many movie references when we were making this game that I was having trouble keeping up with all of them.
Although I'm disappointed that he spelled there as in look there, look over there.
That was what was getting me too.
Instead of they are coming out of the walls.
Fair enough.
Bad grammar. Can't make fun of my accent if you can't grammar.
She's got you there.
I might sound funny, but at least I put a fucking sentence together. Sorry, derailed it there.
So yeah, welcome to the show.
No, I'm good. I'm laughing. I'm trying not to laugh into my mic because I feel like I'm picking up a lot of air. But I'm with you.
That's fine. You can laugh into the mic all you want. We pride ourselves on as little quality as possible.
Cheers.
We're just surprised that there's not more cats making more racket this show.
Seriously. I only have one in my room right now. I don't know what's going on. One is a rarity. Anyway, what the hell were we talking about?
The cats coming.
References.
Cats coming out of the goddamn walls.
Yes. Hey, in my house, that is very possible. We've got 8 of them here, so I'm waiting for just cats to materialize out of nowhere. We're going to be one of those houses that you come home and there's a new cat there and you don't know how it got there.
But you just accept it as one of your own.
We're just like, yeah, that makes sense.
Fair enough.
It just appeared by, I don't know, osmosis maybe. Oh man. So you cat like the poison gas gun. What other cool guns are in the game?
So we've got one called the Brass Blessing. Seems to be kind of a fan favorite. Brass Blessing is actually one that was designed by one of our Kickstarter backers. So we did Kickstarter a few years ago. It's been quite a while, but one of the tiers was allowing our backers to inspire and kind of get involved with designing some of these weapons. So Brass Blessing, the longer you sit on the trigger, the faster it's going to fire. But we have an overheat mechanic that'll get in your way if you wait too long. So if you're really good at kind of you know, riding the edge there, you can fire super quickly. That's a fan favorite. We've also got the the EUV. It's like Electro Ultraviolence Light, which was also a backer inspired one, I believe. And that one just puts all kinds of random status ailments on an alien if you smack them with it. But it looks kind of nice, too. It's kind of got this crazy rainbow vibe going, and it makes for a nice screenshot for sure.
What's it like working with random people to get their weapon ideas into the game? Does everyone ever come up to you with some kind of batshit crazy idea that would just never work?
We tried to accommodate, you know, and you know, it was very collaborative, but everybody was pretty awesome on the game. You know, we had fewer weapon designer tier backers than just, you know, normal buyers of the game. So it wasn't like we had to deal with 100 people. It was a pretty select group, but they were incredibly, you know, collaborative, and nobody was, you know, like, put my balloon gun in the game, damn it, do it now. I mean, everybody's pretty chill and got what the mission of the game was, and yeah, it was pretty good. Now, we did have almost all of our backers contribute names to the game, so every time your jumpers die, you get respawned in and you get a new name, right? Everything from, you know, Sergeant Jackson to some really pretty bizarre names. And those we had to kind of like, you know, be a little bit, maybe a little bit more careful with what we accepted and what we had to kind of send back to the farm. So as long as they were clever and as long as they weren't outright profane, we tried to get them in there. So we got a handful of pop culture references that were just like, yeah, go ahead. You know, we'll let those through. And there were a few that we had to just be like, oh, no, that's not getting in.
So there's no Captain Fuck Bucket in the game.
Right, right. No matter how it's spelled, you know, you're not clever by spelling it with a C and a T. Like, you know, we're not getting that in there. But there was one in particular that was a get-in that I always like to mention. So our designer comes to me and he says, hey, Matt, we got a name that might be questionable. And I'm like, all right, what is it? And it's like, the jumper name is Drew. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with Drew? And they're like, the last name is Peacock. So I'm like, you're trying to tell me that there's a jumper in there named Droopycock. And I'm like, yeah, all right. That's pretty clever. We're okay with that. Sergeant Drew Peacock is okay.
Nice.
It was clever. But if you're just going to come out there and call yourself, you know, Captain, you know, F Bucket, and then get out of here. You're not getting in the game. We got to be at least T for teen. We can't be, you know, M-rated game over here.
Any other fun names that you could tell us about?
There was a lot that kind of played to, you know, pop culture references. There's probably like a Sergeant Boomstick and there's, you know, Amos Saran in there and, you know, a lot of others where they were kind of flopping letters around. So, there's over 2000, jumper names. So keep dying and you'll find some good ones.
I had one, I can't remember all of it, but it was something Fuzzy Pants. And I was like, oh, I think it was like Bob Fuzzy Pants or something like that. And I was just like, that's so ridiculous. I think I wrote it in my review and then I've lost it.
Yeah, they're pretty, I mean, it's just good fun. We didn't take ourselves too seriously. So, you know, we wanted to show off craftsmanship here and make sure that it was solid. But, you know, if somebody wanted to be Bob Fuzzy Pants, we're like, yeah, it's fine. That's fine.
One of the things that I was curious about, you mentioned that there is multiplayer. It is local, but if I'm not mistaken, on Steam, they have online multiplayer, correct?
Yeah, so we did pursue online multiplayer on Steam, I mean, it was an intense endeavor. I mean, we spent an insane amount of time trying to perfect that, and and to be, you know, transparent with the audience, like there's still some issues with it, even on Steam, which came out a long time ago. So we recognize, you know, some of those struggles. And when we came to consoles, you know, we had built a lot of that online infrastructure around, you know, Steamworks and their matchmaking system. And when we wanted to go to consoles, we wanted to focus on things that we felt we could do very well. And we were having significant issues with the online multiplayer, so we made a tough call. And for the most part, the fans have supported us. There's still a handful that have, you know, sent us tweets and other things. Hey, Graphite, get this thing online on consoles. It'd be so great. And it's, you know, it's a fair request. But for now, we wanted to focus on just doing local well, and I think we hit that.
Is online still a possibility for the future for console?
You know, I always say everything's possible. It's not a priority for us right now. We've already gotten some, you know, good feedback from this initial launch that deals with more gameplay requests. And so that's kind of where our heads are at. So nothing's impossible. Nothing's, you know, completely off limits. It's just not a focus of ours right now.
Makes
sense. Were there any gameplay requests that kind of surprised you?
There weren't, nothing really that surprised us, necessarily. You know, there's a few related, there were some that got brought up that when I was playing it, I was like, I wonder if this is going to be an issue or not. So for example, like the rumble, like the HD rumble, you know, both consoles, you know, I kind of felt like if you're playing with certain weapons, and we use the rumble to kind of tell the player when the overheat's about to happen, right? So you're not looking at your UI, you're getting attacked by 1,000 bugs. To know when your weapon's about to overheat, it's pretty, I think, useful for that rumble to give you. But if you're playing with some weapons versus others, it's going to rumble a lot. So, you know, we're kind of going back and forth of, you know, should we do it less? Should we do it more? And so we ask some fans, we say, hey, what do you think? And they're like, oh, I love it. And then some are like, no, it's way too much. So there's some of those things where, you know, when we were playing, we were thinking all about the design intention and maybe a little less about how it feels to be, you know, playing it with certain configurations. So some of that we're going to have to kind of clean up. Maybe we'll make it a toggle, you know, turn it on off for your player preference. But that was some things that maybe didn't surprise us, but we kind of discovered it a little later than I'd liked.
Mm-hmm. When you defeat the aliens in the game, they drop goo. What was the decision to make that the currency that you use for upgrades?
You know, that was one of the things that I had kind of put out there very early on. And we, you know, we've got a full team here at Graphite Lab. We have lots of different, you know, art and programming and design that led into this. And the lead designer, Matt Donatelli, and I, in the very early days, were kind of crafting the overall structure. And I was, we were just talking. I'm like, all right, the aliens, you know, you bust them up. It'd make good sense to use whatever they leave behind to kind of like study it, understand it, improve your weapons, and then destroy them better, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're like, yeah, so these aliens, they drop little goo bits. So the name goo was maybe a little bit temporary, but it just sounded good and it sounded silly. And we're like, all right, yeah, it's just goo. So you pick up all this alien goo. We called it popcorn for a while because they kind of look like little popcorn
kernels. It does look like popcorn
right? kernels. So like when, especially when you open a chest and it kind of like fountains everywhere, like, hey, popcorn.
Yay.
Right? Popcorn shower. So, yeah, little goo bits. We're happy with them. We like them.
Goo. What's a everyone. Good way for new gamers to accumulate a decent amount of goo?
Those relic rooms, man. Those relic mm-hmm. rooms spawn randomly, and they're a little tricky, but they're set. So while most of Hive Jump is procedurally generated, including where those rooms spawn, the rooms themselves are static, so you can practice them. You can get into a relic room and be like, ah, I've been here before, and practice and get a little bit better. So when you get to the end of any relic room, there's a chest, and those chests pop out significant amounts of goo. So that's one thing I'd recommend.
And what if you suck too much to make it through?
recruit some friends, man. Recruit some friends. So only one jumper needs to get to the end to pop out whatever relic is in the chest. So if you got four jumpers going in, you got a little bit better shot of getting to the end there. Yeah.
The relics make all the difference, too.
I think they're, yeah, I think they can help quite a lot. Some are more helpful than others. You know, you can pull out some that, you know, move your jumpers faster, which I think is pretty valuable. Some that restore the backpack, which is like by far the most clutch one you can pull, in my opinion. And there's some that maybe, you know, add some environmental resistance. So if you're like, oh, poison resist, but you're, you know, have already cleared that poison hive, you know, some of those can be a little less effective.
There's a real-time strategy segment to the game when you're not doing all the 2D bug-squashing platforming stuff. What are good strategies for keeping those hives from taking over fucking everything when you're doing the RTS?
Yeah. So the reinforcements are really pretty helpful. They're pretty cheap. So to make sure that you kind of reinforce those outer points, is a good strategy there. Yeah, take your time in the hive. 'Cause when you jump, you know, if you're losing, in the hives, then, you know, they'll have a chance to push you back. So, yeah, that layer on top to kind of connect everything, is, you know, one of those areas where I feel like we could continue to do more with it. You know, if there ever was a, you know, a Hive Jump sequel, I think that layer of the game, you know, there's a lot more that we could do. But I really like that it's there because it kind of gives you a sense that you are really controlling this whole planet versus just this, you know, one jump.
It definitely gives it more of a worldly feel.
Yeah.
You're not just trying to destroy one hive. There's multiple hives, and if you fuck up, they're going to impose on you, and there's going to be more.
That's right. Yeah.
You mentioned a possible sequel. Is that something you guys are looking into, or are you working on a different game, or are you just releasing this one and saying, let's take some time off and figure out what the hell we want to do first?
Oh, well, we always have a saying here, save it for the sequel. So, like, we're always thinking about what we would do for, you know, the next game or the next game. You know, Graphite's a little unique in that we don't just do our own IP. You know, we're constantly making games for other people, we can say other people, for other studios. So we have that kind of work for hire model going as well. So, you know, when
anything
we
might know about that you guys have worked on?
Yeah, I mean, we've had partnerships with Hasbro and Disney and Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network. So if you're, you know, a console player, when we did, the Ben 10 franchise, we did some of those games with Cartoon Network and Konami way back in the day.
Nice. Those have always been solid.
Yeah, I mean, we had a great time with those. I got to put the Konami code in a game, right? That was pretty, bucket moment for me. So we in my previous tenure as a game developer, have worked on, apps and games with Transformers and, the Grinch and Garfield. And we did some stuff for Sesame Street and, all over the place. So, over the course of Hive Jump's development, I want to say we pumped out about 20 apps alongside working on Hive Jump. So there's a lot of distractions. That was one of the tougher parts of it is dealing with Hive Jump and keeping the lights on. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the game's available now on Switch and Xbox One. Do you guys have any PlayStation plans?
We got asked that a few times. In fact, people, were very blunt about it. Like, why do you hate Sony? We don't hate Sony. You know, we started when we're looking at the kind of the current gen, we said, okay, let's go to Nintendo and Xbox because we developed for those platforms before. Maybe not the Switch and the Xbox One, but we'd release games on Wii U and we'd release games on Xbox 360. So we kind of knew those systems a little bit better. We had relationships with those companies. You know, in my life as a game developer, this is my like 15th year in the industry. We had developed, games for PS2. They got canceled. We developed games for PSP. They got canceled. We had set in motion many different developments and they kept getting canceled. So maybe somewhere in the back of my mind, I just said, screw it. Like, I mean, I have a, you know, Sony platforms myself. I mean, I've had, tons of, you know, fun with my PlayStation, life with my PlayStation. It just never really, you know, kind of manifested. So, you know, maybe someday, it wasn't anything we focused on for this kind of, first go.
So it's not out of the question, just kind of like online. It's not a priority right now.
Yeah, no, definitely not out of the question. I mean, goodness, what the PS4 is outselling the Switch for the last 2 months. I mean, it has a huge install base. So
I think one of our last episodes, it was announced that they shipped over 91 million consoles.
Right. So yeah, I mean, there's many reasons why we should, you know, crack open that contract and sign up and do some stuff on the, on that platform. Yeah, it just, you know, we're a small team. We had to kind of prioritize a few things and, we made calls based on where we'd been before, right? Some known quantities.
Which makes sense to do.
We got to manage a little risk. for the most part, we're kind of batshit crazy with our risk, but, a little bit, we got to be careful.
Hey, we like batshit crazy on this show, if you haven't figured it out yet.
It sounded like it, so I thought I'd offer that up.
Be honest, have any of your other interviews ever started off talking about ice cream cake?
No.
Yes. No, they have not.
That's a first.
Now you know how to launch into a conversation when you go on a podcast and you're like, I don't know how I'm going to open this up. I don't know what I'm going to talk about. Just be like, do you fucking like ice cream cake? And pepper, there you go.
Peppermint or bust.
Yeah. Peppermint cheesecake. God damn it, it's not time of year for me to be making that shit. Got distracted. I had a question because you mentioned that you had developed for the Wii U before. Did Hive Jump actually release on the Wii U?
Yeah, Hive Jump came out on the Wii U last September. It was crazy late. I apologize for that. We had initially intended for it to come out alongside the Steam version, but we just didn't have the resources to push it through. We tried and tried, but we just needed more time. So Steam came out in January that year, and then the Wii U followed in September. So it took us a fair amount of time to get through certification on that platform, make sure that it ran well, and even then we had some issues with it. So it did release on Wii U. We're very happy that we were able to follow through and get out on that platform. I think I read something earlier today that there was a game releasing on the Wii U like next week or something. I really thought like, man, we are going to be literally the last game to release on this platform, but not the case at all. Like, they were releasing games on the platform, for the last year, and sounds like there's still a few out there.
I'm sure Just Dance is one of them.
Just Dance was one of them, 2019, in fact. Yeah.
Because that released on the Wii as well.
Right? It's insane.
Did it really?
Yeah.
That's nuts. Then again, there's teams that still, I mean, we've talked to them. There's teams that still make games for the original Nintendo. So at this point, you just assume that whatever platform Nintendo has, somebody's going to make a game for it well beyond its years.
I think that's a little bit different from Just Dance 2019 releasing on the Wii and Wii U.
No, look, I'm telling you, we're going to be like 14 years from now, and we're going to be still doing this goddamn podcast, and we're just we're going to be like, Just Dance 2074 released on the Wii U.
Why do they keep releasing those goddamn things?
Confangled newfound music with these whippersnappers, and they're hooping and hollering, and
I lost my teeth again.
Boy, this show just evolved into chaos real quick tonight.
Yes, Matt, welcome to the show.
I think you're dabbling in truth there. I think it's very possible that Just Dance 2074 will come out to the Wii. That's why I'm so somber here, is that it's a stark reality.
If I get in on that, that way I've already got my foot in the door.
Oh, my Lord. Well, Matt, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything that you want to talk about the game that we didn't bring up?
Nothing in particular. I just appreciate you helping us get the word out. We love, hearing feedback from fans and, hearing both good and bad, right? Good stuff, bad stuff. We are still, sending out we call them recruitment keys. So we've got a few tweets out there where if you find them and retweet them, we're doing key giveaways at certain thresholds. So that might be something, for your listeners to keep in mind. And I have, just one, question for each of you. As you've kind of gone through the game, what is your favorite gun, or what is your favorite, jumper color? Such a simple thing, but we find that people are very, very like tied to their jumper color.
I'm blue. Pink. I'm always blue.
All blue. Yeah. And we have pink as well. Okay.
I have to be pink, and I have to have the skull insignia.
Right.
Which is going to be interesting because I already promised number one that we would play at co-op this weekend. My kids aren't allowed to play the Xbox during school weeks. So she's been holding on to play Hive Jump. Because we have a 4-day weekend this week.
Right. Okay. Very cool.
And so she's like, we're so excited. We're going to tear into it. And so like, I can already tell me and her are going to fight. It's her favorite color and she likes all things skulls. And I don't know where she gets that, honestly, but me and her.
Bad influence somewhere along the line.
Yeah. Horrible parenting, though.
Well, we cleaned some stuff up going to the Xbox and the Switch, so it's no longer teen rating. We're down to E10, so
What got cleaned up?
Just a little bit of, you know, we streamlined some of the language in there, and realized that maybe we were being a little bit overzealous on our interpretations of some of the ratings. I think we're a little bit hard on ourselves. And I think now they've also kind of reclassified a few things. You know, we've got, you know, kind of mild cartoon violence versus previous interpretations. So I think we're fun for the whole family is what I'm trying to say.
I agree.
One and two.
That's right. There you go.
I mean,
number
like,
three
look
is going to be on the sideline. So
look at the trailer for the new Mortal Kombat and compare it to the original Mortal Kombat. How violence has changed over the years in gaming.
Yeah. I used to do kind of talks and speak at universities talking about violence in video games. And that first Mortal Kombat that, you know, predicated the entire formation of the ESRB to begin with was all, you know, pretty cartoony by today's standards, mm-hmm. right? It wouldn't have set off that alarm. But, you know, the games industry has been continuing to cause the violent scare. I mean, since like the, you know, 70s and 80s, I mean, some of the earliest arcade games with like Death Race were, you know, very much targeted as saying, oh, they're corrupting our youth, you know? So it's been continually cycling through, but, yeah.
I remember my sister giving me the first Mortal Kombat game and staring me dead in the face. My sister was 14 years older than me. She stared me dead in the face. She said, "Don't you dare tell Mom I bought you this."
Yeah. Yeah, it was a game changer, man. So, but that's the industry we love. So, we're happy to be a part of it.
It's funny too, because with the new Mortal Kombat coming out, I've been watching the trailers for it and I'm so excited. And then I think my husband doesn't like to play fighting games because I trap him in a corner and kick his ass. And then I thought, oh, number one. And then I thought, these graphics are a little much, even for a 15-year-old.
Right.
Maybe I should draw the line here.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's getting. This stuff's it's getting real.
It is.
I tend to be a little more strict than most parents anyways. If you caught Grand Theft Auto on any of my consoles, I would be kicking somebody's ass.
Yeah. I think it's good and wise for us to kind of self-regulate. I think, you know, ESRB and IARC and those others, I think it's the smart play, right? Keep people informed, mm-hmm. let people make their choice. And, I think it's really impressive what our industry does on its own, right? Without any other real need for interference. I think it's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Now, as long as parents do their job, too.
Cheers.
Before we let you go, I did want to ask you one last question. Tell us about the soundtrack, and is it available for sale?
Ooh, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. So our composer his name's Jimmy Henson. He goes by the name Big Giant Circles.
I love that man so much.
That's where you'll find it online. Yeah, we were incredibly fortunate to get connected with Jimmy. He's done music and contributions to games like Borderlands 2, Mass Effect 2. This guy did the soundtrack for Threes and other great mobile titles as well. And so we reached out to him and said, "Yo, Jimmy, would you like to help us by making some sweet, you know, kind of chiptune-y, kind of orchestral music for our crazy bug hunt called Hive Jump?" And he's like, "Sign me up." So you can find it on Bandcamp. Search for Big Giant Circles and search for Hive Jump, and support the guy. He's been a great ally of ours, and I think made some really, really awesome music for the game.
I will have to pick up that soundtrack so I could play a couple songs on the show.
Yeah, definitely.
His quality stuff. I love Jimmy. He's such a good dude. I've known him for a solid decade now or something, and he's just classy individual. I love that guy.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself.
But we've had you on here for a while. I don't want to take up all of your night. Where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing with the game?
So follow us on Twitter @HiveJump. You can find us online at HiveJump.com. Our studio, Graphite Lab, is same thing, graphitelab.com, and on Twitter at Graphite Lab. And throw us a tweet, give us a follow, and keep in touch. Some exciting things coming up.
Awesome. We very much look forward to whatever Graphite Labs is putting out next, and hopefully we'll be able to cover that one on the show in the future as well.
Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Fall from heaven, fight like hell.
Sounds good. Have yourself a good night.
Back at you guys. Thanks.
That was fun.
That was fun.
I like fun interviews.
I like when it derails. It's 97% of the time it's my fault and it's on accident, but I like when it happens all the same.
Derails into ice cream cake and fun shit cake like that.
Cake was pretty good. I don't even like Oreos, but that was pretty good.
We should probably move on to news for the week. I don't have much news this week.
No?
No, not too much. Just a couple little things on my end, then we'll see if you have anything to talk about. First up, one game was added to the backward compatibility lineup this week on Xbox One, and that is Ace Combat 6 Fires of Liberation, which it's about goddamn time they added that one, because it's a pre-order bonus for the new game releasing now.
Yeah. Also, we missed it. Vertically Impaired subbed.
Shit, I meant to bring that up. Shout out to Tony. 10 months. So we officially have a newborn.
To get rid of the Twitch baby now, you're stuck with it. Depending on where you're at, you may be allowed to leave it at the fire station. It
depends. Maybe.
Maybe. Kentucky, 72 hours, you'd already be SOL. But
like, I have it written down on my notepad here, like, mention Tony, and I was looking at the other. I have a second notepad that has topics that we talked about during the show so that I could keep track of what to put in the write-up when I do it. And I was looking at the wrong tablet. I'm like, weapons, Kickstarter, ice cream cakes.
Isn't it you being all organized with multiple tablets? I'm sitting here like, I don't even have a notebook anymore. I just started typing it on Notepad now.
Yeah.
Save the trees.
Fuck it. We have a liquidator outlet, and we bought like a massive thing of post-it notes for like $4. So I'm using the shit out of them.
When we had the back to school sales, they had those war-bound notebooks for like 5 cents a piece. And I bet I bought 100 of them. And they're just stacked on bookcases in every room in this house. And I swear to God, there's still at least once a week, one of the kids is like, I need a notebook. I can't find one. I'm like, why do you people hate me?
Well, if you need post-it notes, let me know. I'll ship you some. But yeah, big thanks to Tony for subbing for another month. I can't thank you enough. You're such an awesome supporter of the show. Keep subbing. Keep sending me that $2.50 every month.
You are lovely people.
You are. You are good peoples. And I'm glad to see you streaming more Rock Band. Now, back to news. Let's see, what other news? Some new Game Pass editions were announced. This week, we are getting Lego Movie Video Game and We Happy Few.
I'm excited for We Happy Few.
And then next week, we're getting Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor in Saints Row the Third.
I'm a little surprised by Shadow of Mordor.
Why?
Well, maybe I shouldn't be. I was going to say, I don't think we have a whole lot of WB titles that have hit Game Pass or Games with Gold. Usually what's been Games with Gold and those developers that typically work with Games with Gold are a good indicator of what we're going to see hit Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
That or I'm psychotic and I just see patterns where there aren't any.
You might be.
But this is a pattern I have noticed. And I was going to say, we haven't seen a lot of WB titles come through the Games with Gold pipeline. So, like, when Mortal Kombat hit, I was like, what? Because that was a WB title that I didn't expect to see. And, again, it's just Shadow of Mordor is another WB entity. And I was just like, what is this insanity?
Oh, maybe it's a sign that more companies are getting involved with Game Pass and Games with Gold.
I really hope. Like, I'd love to see just so many more games just launched. I'd love to see AAA that isn't a Microsoft exclusive. Just one. Just to see if it would happen.
That would be amazing.
That would be incredible. Just even if it was just a limited thing, like 2 weeks or a month or 2 months or whatever, just once. Just to see it happen.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if it did. Game Pass has so much potential. I don't know if it'll ever get to $60 titles that aren't Microsoft titles being released in their day one. But the more indie games that we see day one, the happier I am, because I get to save money that way.
It is true, though. And a lot of them have been launching straight to Game Pass, especially once. And I think I mentioned when Game Pass first became a thing that it would be a good vehicle for multiplayer indies.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been. We have seen a lot of multiplayer indies take advantage of that and have that player base ready to go.
Yeah. Like, look at it's the recently released Aftercharge. That just launched into Game Pass.
I still gotta play that. Is it? I didn't even know it was multiplayer. I knew nothing about it, just that it was hitting Game Pass. So I was like, well, maybe.
Well, I found out what we're doing tonight.
Oh, I have to install. Is it a very big install?
I have no clue.
You neither. We'll figure it out.
Let's see.
I got
what
all
else?
Weekend.
Unravel 2 is now in the EA Access Vault.
That was fast.
So that's pretty cool. It's 7 months.
No Time asked if We Happy Few was launched with Game Pass. It was not, because when it initially released, it was planned to be a blah, 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 multi-platform title. It was not exclusive to Xbox in any way. Although Microsoft had acquired Compulsion Games.
Yeah.
They were
It released
already
in game preview, if that's what yeah, you're getting mixed game up.
Preview. So it is. What was it, August or September, I think it was, where it went full release.
Yeah.
And now it's in Game Pass. But I'm really happy about it, because a lot of people panned We Happy Few because they weren't expecting that kind of stealthy survival gameplay with it. But for me, I loved that shit. So stealthy survival gameplay with a little bit of horror, and I'm like, oh, I might have to take a review or two less next week. I need to spend some time with this.
Nice. Let's see. What other news do we have? Playground Games and Microsoft have gone ahead and removed the floss and the Carlton dances from Forza Horizon 4, presumably due to the backlash that Fortnite and Epic have been facing with having these dances in the game and the lawsuits they've been facing.
It's a pretty good idea.
So, I'm kind of bummed because the floss was my dance that I used, so I don't know what they're going to do. Mm. I'll have to fire it up and find out what kind of dance I have now. But it's a fucking dance.
Well, and it's a hot button thing, but I have a bit of a different perspective on it as an artist. Even though I'm a different kind of artist, it's still the same concept. Like, when you come up with something, it's so easy for people to go, oh, it's just a dance, or, oh, it's just a picture, and, you know, these are items that are everywhere. You can't just say, I drew it, and it's mine. So it's kind of in that same line, but, like, the whole choreography and coming up with stuff like that, it's a IP type thing, an intellectual property issue. It does make sense. Like, I can understand why they would want to sue over that. So,
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I think I respect that Microsoft took them out. I think the biggest issue as far as Epic goes and they're, you know, using up all the dances, a bigger issue is that they've used actual dances coined by one specific artist that is part of their brand. And that's a little bit more of an issue. And even the floss is a little different. That was a kid doing a meme thing, as far as I'm aware. I don't know that that was an actual thing other than him doing it. If it was, somebody tell me I'm wrong. But, you know, again, with the Carlton, it was a branded dance to another, you know, somebody came up with that for a specific scenario. And so it's a little more touchy.
Yeah. So. Oh, well, we'll find out what happens from here, though.
Can't wait for somebody to sue over the dab. Who did that
first? Oh, God. I don't fucking know. But last bit of news I have. This is exciting. Full cross-platform play is now active in Rocket League.
I'm not going to lie to you. This has been so good. Because I think my printer is losing its shit. Anyway, I've got ghosts.
Pretty much.
No, I've got a cat that probably stepped on it. But clearly the platinums on ranked doubles from PlayStation not good.
No.
I've had some super easy wins that I should not be having.
Not last night.
And I don't know what happened last night, but we were getting our faces fucked off.
It's because and you I were thought, playing with me.
Well, but I thought, okay, when Studa gets here, he's going to pick up my slack. Because I'm not a good goalie. If I manage to get one save whole night, I'm dancing. Like, my little broke ass got my cane out. I'm shitting and getting it. I'm happy with myself. But I was like, okay, I'm a striker and I need a goalie, and Joe's not.
No, I'm not.
And as soon as Suda gets here, I straight up text him like, I need your help. And I'm like, as soon as Suda gets here, I will have a goalie and I can help Joe with striking and get him better at making goals. And it just didn't work out.
That'll teach you.
That's why I started yelling, Student, get back in your fucking box. I just needed a goalie. But I don't know. It didn't happen. And then turn around and we played this morning and we were like, I think we blew through 4 games of ranked.
Oh,
and
God.
Just went up the whole time. And I'm going, what is this? And then I was like, oh, yeah.
These oh, yeah, Joe's not here.
No. But you say that. My rank in threes is not good because Studa and I play doubles a lot to the point that a lot of the way that you play in doubles and the way you play in threes, they're very different. And there's kind of shit that I can get away with in doubles you cannot get away with in threes. And it's very hard for me to adjust to that. So. That's my own shit. I need to get better. One of these days, I will make it to Diamond Division. But in the meantime, I am a Plat 2 scrub for life.
I believe in you.
No, don't do that.
But yeah, anyway, that's the news I got. Anything on your end?
The Division announced some details about how they're going to handle the Dark Zone. In Division 2. So we are 2 months away from the Division 2, and this is basically all you're going to hear me want to talk about for the next 2 months.
Oh, God, yeah.
I have no shame. But they did a live.
They announced a new camo pattern. Oh, my God.
They did give us some details about how the Dark Zone is going to work, and I think that people will be interested in it. The Dark Zone in the first Division, it was a creative PvP mechanic, but it had a lot of issues in that people who were even a little bit time sinkers could just smash through and run over people who were newer. And they tried to fix that by separating us out into gear scores and world tiers and all that. And before it was done, like, there's 30 different ways that they separate out the Dark Zone to try to make it so that hardcore players like me can't fuck up noobs like you. they've definitely learned their lesson as far as that goes. As with what they've described the Division 2, first off, it's going to actually have 3 Dark Zones instead of just one.
Interesting.
And certain events will happen in different parts of the Dark Zones. So if you don't want to participate in an event, fucking just fuck off to another DZ and be fine with it. You won't have to deal with that event. they are going to keep with like the world tier brackets that they used before, but rather than separating out world tier and then gear score, they're just going to separate it out into world tiers and then normalize your gear. So even if you've got lower quality gear, you're still going to compete with people who are higher than you and still be able to stand up to them. This is a mechanic that they used with Last Stand, which was their PvP, I think it was 8v8 mode, so that it didn't matter how much time you had put in or how good you were, your gear was going to balance out with everybody else's gear, and you stood a chance.
That's good.
So it's more noob friendly.
Which is good for noobs like me.
Yeah. But there's still going to be, I mentioned the events, there's still going to be events that will crop up. And during the events, that normalization gets dropped. Those are clearly marketed more for the hardcore min-max, you know, stat junkies that are just going to want to tear through people. Like me.
I tried playing The Division again yesterday or 2 days ago. Just figuring I would try, like, doing a mission or two by myself. I was getting my ass handed to me. So I might need a Sherpa again.
30?
No, I'm at, like, 22.
Oh, okay. Yeah. This student, I need to go back and finish getting the last of the shields before the Division 2 comes out. We've been waiting a few months because we were going through them so quickly that we just decided to let it sit and let the shields rack up. So that when we did go back, we'd have a good 2 or 3 days worth of content to go through rather than just knocking it out in an afternoon and being like, well, fuck, now what?
Anyway, any other news or should we jump on to the reviews?
We can go on. I'm done now.
All right. We got 4 games to talk about tonight, so it should be a fairly quick one. The first game to talk about tonight is called Guacamelee 2, developed and published by Drinkbox Studios, released January 18th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $19.99, and is a Play Anywhere title, which is awesome.
Oh.
Brawling has never been more beautiful. The long-awaited sequel to the smash hit action platformer is finally on Xbox One. Guacamelee 2 brings luchador Juan out of retirement for a stunning new Metroidvania-style adventure where he must face his greatest challenge yet, one that threatens to tear apart the very fabric of the Mexiverse. Cole, tell us about it.
So, this is basically a 2D platform beat-em-up with At this point, look, if there are not 6 different genres in a game description, it's not a game.
Like Metroidvania.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. I got that out. We all know what Guacamelee is.
Yes. If you haven't played the first Guacamelee, what the fuck are you...
Joe, you still haven't played the first one.
What the fuck?
I spend all my time reviewing games. I don't get to pick anything.
Okay, but you know what Guacamelee is.
Even with not having played it, I was very familiar with the concept of it. So I still knew what I was getting into. And the game, thankfully, although maybe not thankfully, if you haven't played the first, the very opening scene of this game is a spoiler alert. Because it's a refresher of the final boss. So you get to go through, kick the final boss's ass again, before you carry on with the rest of the story. So we've seen Juan, who was the hero of the first game, I presume.
if you've ever played Symphony of the Night, you're going to love the intro to this game.
Yeah, I didn't get the reference. I'm sorry.
How dare you?
I know. But you see Juan, he's past his prime now. He's living kind of a normal everyman's life. The notoriety of saving the Mexiverse has faded. And he's just a dude with a wife and kids and a beer belly. And they've run out of tacos. And now he's got to go to the goddamn store. This trip for tacos just turned sour very quickly. And we start to see holes being ripped in the very fabric of space and time, if you will. And it's so hard to explain that. It's just like, it looks like Tetris squares are being taken out of the page. But we see a return of I assume it's a previous character again, because they seem very chummy, but the dude's a goat. And they basically explain that there are different timelines and that the big bad is tearing shit up all across all these different timelines, and they have to time jump and warp through these different dimensions in the Mexiverse in order to officially beat the big bad. There's some unapologetic comedy and a lot of references that happen here. One of them being the very first portal that you go through takes you to a limbo like timeline. All the way up to the big giant ass spider that will try to stab you when you try to exit the timeline. I think that might have been my favorite reference just the whole time with the game. It's like, I can't believe they referenced Limbo.
Yeah, there were some good references in the game.
There really were. There's a restaurant called Bad Hombres in one of the other timelines. It's really creative. The art style, it's your classic Guacamelee. You would recognize it anywhere, even if you haven't played it. Everything is brightly colored. It's just a lot of fun, even just to look at. It could be a little garish at times. You're just like, there are so many colors on this screen.
Such a pretty game.
But it is really pretty. And it's rare to see games with that kind of color saturation. Like, so many games want to be gritty and grungy and dirty looking and hardcore. And this one's like, fuck that, hot pink everywhere. For the gameplay, everything felt pretty fluid. The controls were really tight. I knew what I was doing when I was trying to make the combos, although I'm a notorious button masher. And playing on normal, you can get away with that to an extent, but you will die a few times, or a lot if you're me. Because it can get difficult, and it can get difficult surprisingly fast.
Oh, definitely.
Especially, I thought some of the platforming mechanics where you kind of have to time things, I was just like falling repeatedly, and I'm going, I'm never going to get out of here. I'm just in this room till the day I die. And that's that.
Yeah, some of the puzzle challenge rooms in this game require some pretty crazy reflexes.
Mm-hmm. And I don't have that shit.
Yeah, I don't have reflexes.
Yeah, I'm old and I have crooked fingers. I can't reflex. And I'm just sitting there like, I'm jumping and I'm just like, I'm punching and I'm trying to grab hooks. And I'm like, I hate this. I can't do this. But for all for all intents and purposes, everything else is a lot of fun. Like I said, it was just difficult. I imagine on hard, it would probably make you pull your hair out. Was the first one that hard?
The first one definitely had moments where it was that difficult. It's not hard in an unfair way. It's just very well designed.
Yeah. And
where it requires crazy precision to make some of the jumps and some of the leaps and just complete some of the mazes and objectives. It requires work and practice.
For a platformer of this kind of scale, you would expect that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's fitting gameplay, even if it is difficult for some people. That's just me being me and being bad.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to admit that that's not a flaw with the game. That's just me. And I'm okay with that. But it was just difficult at times where I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to get out of here. And realistically, shutting it off for a little while, going back to it, a couple hours later, I'd be like, I was a dumbass.
Yeah. Sometimes I've said that about you before, too. So.
It's a fitting statement. Have you ever heard the way I talk?
Nope. Not once.
But it does have 4-player local co-op. I did try to play with number one. everything just devolved into chaos very quickly. And there was just so much, like, bodies flying around and random punches here and there that I thought, even with just the two of us, that it was incredibly difficult to understand what was going on the screen. It got just cluttered and frustrating. My advice is just go at it solo. Save yourself a headache of trying to play with somebody else. I'm sure there's somebody out there who's going to be like, but it's so much better with two people. Fine, have at that. But for me, it was just, I couldn't keep up with it. I was like, no. Which one of us is punching who again? And then we yes. both end up dead. But other than that, I had a lot of fun with it. I'm looking forward to finishing it. I know that it has a secret hard mode. I'm not touching it with a 10-foot pole. It's hard enough as it is. But other than that, I give it a solid buy it.
Wow, I didn't even have to ask you.
No, I'm rolling with it on my own today. All right, I'm a then. Big kid, though.
I agree. I give it a buy it as well. I love the game. I love the series. Drinkbox has put out nothing but quality, and every time I see their name from now on, it's just a sign that there's going to be a quality game. Drinkbox is one of those few companies that I absolutely trust to knock it out of the park. Yeah.
Go! Next!
All right, next game to talk about is called Chrono Ghost, developed and published by Nighttime Studios, released January 4th on Steam for $9.99. You are the Chrono Ghost. You must progress through challenging levels using your newly acquired abilities. As you progress, your adventure becomes considerably more demanding. There are more secrets to discover on your journey. Go forth and find them. Hurry, time is running out. Cole, tell us about it.
You play as a Chrono Ghost. Surprise!
Shocker.
And this, again, this is a really difficult platformer. It has an interesting mechanic of being able to slow down and speed up time. And in a pinch, you can actually stop time completely. The goal is basically to get through each stage without getting fucked up by the various types of obstacles that are in your way. I say that because I'm going to tell you this. The game has, if I'm not mistaken, it was 4 difficulties that you could choose from, right? I don't know how anybody plays on anything other than casual. Casual gives you unlimited lives, unlimited time. There's plenty of checkpoints. It's a beautiful thing because you're going to fucking die. If you play on, I can't remember if it was normal or hard that I started off with. For some reason, I was like really rambunctious with this. And I was like, I can do this. I'm going to play on casual. Fuck that. I needed to play on casual. Because when you play on a harder difficulty, it limits your time and it limits how many lives. And at the same time, I saw it and I was like, 15 minutes a stage, 100 lives. I can do that. But who the fuck needs more than 100 lives to get through a stage?
This guy right here.
I needed a fucking 100 lives. That's who. Because it's hard. There's, and it starts off so simple. You're like, I can do this and it's easy. And then you die within 3 seconds because it doesn't, there is a tutorial level, but I passed it because I was like, I got this. I looked at the controls. I know what I'm doing. It's like 4 buttons. I'm an idiot.
Oh, you.
I'm an idiot. So each level, they're so well designed, but there's different obstacles. There's spikes that will come up out of the ground. Sometimes they'll come out of the ceiling. Sometimes they come at you at a diagonal. There's just spikes and they hurt. There are also buzzsaws and they hurt. And sometimes it gets flat out unruly and the floor will start to move, or it'll be ice, or there's the gravity's reversed, or something is sticky on the floor. Just anything to make your life hell while you're trying to get this little ghost through these stages. Now, I mentioned that you have the ability to slow down, speed up time, and that you can even stop it entirely. Not everything is going to be affected by that ability, however. Some items glow red. Some items glow green. If it's green, it's going to be affected by your time abilities. If it's red, it's telling you to fuck off. It's going to kill you anyway. I found that out the hard way. Because I'm like, I'm going to stop time and I'm going to dash past this bike. I'm dead.
Yep.
A lot.
Yep.
The red ones don't care.
Played this one at MAGFest and watching other people play it. It was one of those situations where it's like, you know, this doesn't look too hard. It looks, yeah, it makes sense. This button speeds up. This button slows down. Hold them both and time stops. You have a gauge that lasts for as long as the time stops, so you got to manage that. It doesn't seem too hard. I'm one of the few people who went through the 100 lives at MAGFest.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, on their demo stations, it was an accelerated rate of which you went through the lives. Like, it would be like 99, 98, 97, 96, 50, 50, you know, 49, 48, 47, 30. So I didn't go through all 100 lives during MAGFest, but I probably would have.
Yeah. Yeah. You would have. I did, and I gave up and I went back with unlimited lives, and I think it took me, I think one of the levels I had like 186 deaths or something like that just to get through one stage.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is a testament to willpower, because the odd thing about it,
and persistence. Yeah,
like the odd thing about it is like the more you die, the more you just like, fuck this, I can do this, why am I dying? And you get like this unusual cockiness about you.
And then you die even quicker.
Yeah, because you're like, whatever, now I know the pattern and I'm just going to fly through it. And it's like, dead. Ah, stabbed you in the butt. And you're like, but I'm a ghost. I can't get stabbed in the butt. You can get stabbed in the butt.
Yeah. Overall, though, I think it is a beautiful, beautiful game.
Oh my God, it's gorgeous. And the interesting thing about it is that I was playing it on really low settings because I wasn't real sure that my graphics card could hack it. And so when it popped up and gave me the option to like set it to go either be prettier or be faster, I went with faster. And even with that, like, I felt like there was no degradation to the quality whatsoever. It was just absolutely vibrant game. There's a silhouette aspect involved. So when I say vibrant, I don't mean it's like Guacamelee vibrant, but like the backgrounds, there's just these gorgeous aura glows and just these teals and greens. And then there's the icy levels and they're just really fucking pretty. However, I have one complaint.
Let's hear it.
The keyboard bindings are awful. ZXC and space. I tried. To play with the keyboard bindings, and then I just reached over and grabbed my controller.
I was going to say, why the fuck were you not using a controller?
Well, because I wanted to see if it could be done properly. I'm not a keyboard and mouse player, and I'm trying to learn. And I thought it was just me, but I was like, no, this is just a really bad set, you know, binding setup, and I can't get used to it. But once I started playing it with the controller, all bets were off. Like, it was just so much smoother and easier to play, and the bindings were so much more intuitive. And I don't know if that's just because I'm a controller person or if it's because it's really just bound that much better. But for the controller, instead of using ZXC space and arrows, it's just your face buttons. A is jump, Y is dash. And then you use LB and RB. LB slows down time, RB speeds it up, and holding them both together stops it completely. And it just felt so natural to push the buttons like that instead of trying to just, the keyboard bindings were weird and didn't feel as good. So I definitely recommend if you're gonna torture yourself, do it with a controller. But yeah, like you said though, it is absolutely beautiful. I thought it was really creative. I thought the levels were designed really well. The difficulty, it's hard to start with, but I don't feel like it spikes unfairly, which is crazy because I was dying so much. And at the same time, I was like, I'm not mad at it because I know that when I die, it's because I did something dumb.
Yeah.
So it felt very fair for all of that.
But well, then overall, $10 on this one. What do you think?
It's worth it. Definitely buy it. And I hope it comes to Xbox.
There are plans.
Good. Because it needs to be on Xbox. It's definitely meant for, it feels like it has like it was meant for a console game in the first place.
Yeah, the plans are to come to Xbox, I believe, in the spring, they were saying, and then looking at other platforms as well. So
I can't wait to not lock an unlock an achievement in it.
Oh, come on. There will be death achievements. There's always death achievements.
That'll be the only ones I have.
Complete a stage with one death. Yeah, bullshit. Good luck. But next game to talk about is a preview of the game Degrees of Separation, developed by Moondrop, published by Modus Games. It's releasing February 14th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4. Degrees of Separation is a puzzle platformer where cooperation is built into every move. Two contrasting souls, Ember and Rhyme, fall in love but are separated by an enigmatic force and must use their powers to progress through a spectacular world of fantasy and adventure. Dark Mika covered this one out and checked it out and wrote in a preview. Very clear, this is a preview of the game. This is only a partial game demo. So, just some hands-on time. Let's see what she's got to say. Degrees of Separation is a 2D puzzle platformer made to be played in single-player or two-player co-op. You control or share control of Ember, a girl from a fiery land, and Rhyme, a boy from an icy land. Their world seems to be separated by the powers of their people, which has dwindled seemingly down to just the two of them. The world is shifting, though. The land seemed to be mixing. Ice is melting the ground. The ground is breaking, and sulfur is pouring out. You could use some more commas there. Mountains are crumbling, and plants are dying. The end is nigh. This brings both of them from their homelands to try and figure out what's going on, only to meet soon after and team up to figure out more about each other and what's happening to the world, all while keeping an eye on the other just in case it's their fault. The mechanics of the game are pretty cool. The screen is effectively split between the characters. The world is winter on the side the boy is on, summer on the side the girl is on. There's a line between the characters that splits the world into summer for the girl and winter for the boy. Moving the characters different distances and heights change where this line is aligned on the screen. This is used to solve puzzles in the game. Puzzles I found where the summer causes hot air to rise, or to raise lanterns, to raise platforms, and winter does the opposite. Another required me to roll a log through snow to make a giant snowball, which I then had to partially melt to make go through the holes and the like. The puzzles get fairly complex. In a later level, when the characters got too close together, there would be an explosion sending them both flying in opposite directions. This allowed them to jump up to higher areas and destroy occasional objects. Each level seems like it's going to provide a new ability while you're in the area. If you play at co-op, you choose which character to play as, and the other player plays as the other character. Nothing else changes. I'm not sure if this is going to be online multiplayer or just local. However, the game was made to be played by two people, so it'll be much easier to do it that way, especially if you want to grab the collectibles. It is doable solo, though, just a bit more of a pain in the ass. The visuals are cute, and there's narration for a good chunk of the game, which is also really cute, too. I put 6 hours into just 3 levels. I don't know how many levels will be in the whole game, but I have a feeling it'll be 6 to 8 total, so it's looking to be a solid 10 to 15 hour game. There's no price listed yet, but if it's 10 to 20 bucks, I think this will probably be one that you'll want to check out if you like puzzle games. I'm really excited for it. I played through it and was bummed that I actually didn't have access to the whole game. So yeah, keep an eye on this one.
Interesting.
It's always good when a preview leaves you wanting more.
Yeah. When you said that the characters were Ember and Rhyme, I had a moment because my daughter has a rabbit named Ember. And when we got Ember, we had actually got a second one at the same time. And his name was Rhyme. Hmm. He's not with us anymore. But it was so odd to hear Ember, and I was like, what? That was the rabbit's name. And oddly enough, Ember is black with like orange flecks in her hair, and Rhyme was white. So fire and ice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I was like, wait a second, these people stole my rabbit's name.
Sounds like a really cool game, though. I'm dying to see more of it myself, and hopefully we'll have a full review for everyone next month sometime.
Who did you say the developer was?
It's developed by Moondrop and published by Modus Games.
Hmm. I was expecting it to be Michael Arts, because they did The Path of Modus, and a lot of the gameplay sounds very similar to Pillar, the way that the screen is split and you have two characters on each side. Pillar played out like that, some of the puzzles in it.
Well, I guess we'll find out in a couple of weeks.
Interesting.
But one final game to talk about tonight, that is called Mullet Man and the Mole Men, developed and published by Steve Mata, released January 18th on Xbox One for $4.99. It's Judgment Day on the world of the Mole Men, and the Wall of Fire is coming. Help Mullet Man kick the Mole Men to safety by staying just ahead of the Wall of Fire in this intense side-scrolling puzzle platformer. Cole, how batshit crazy is this one?
You ever just launch a game and immediately say, what the fuck am I doing? Here we are.
In a good way. We should put.
Yeah, I will say I was pleasantly surprised. Like, I wasn't really sure what to expect from the actual gameplay itself. Like, I watched a trailer of it before I say, yeah, I'll take the review or not. And I still just was going into this, like, what am I really going to be doing here? Waiting for something weird to happen. The game is broken down into three episodes. So you start with episode one, Unlocked. You play as Mullet Man. You get to pick from a ridiculous collection of costumes. Some of them I am pretty certain qualify as copyright infringement.
Nope, they're just different enough, I'm guessing.
They're very, very something.
They toe the line.
You definitely tell who they're supposed to be. And I'm pretty sure that the one I picked was my gray-haired mullet dude was in a Tooth Fairy costume. Nice. He was pink and he had wings. And it was a little ridiculous, and I'm not mad about it. It's really hard to, like, describe it in detail because the game does have a very retro 8-bit pixel look. There's a lot of squares. And it can be a little difficult, more so on the menu than in the actual game. Once you start playing, there's enough contrast that you can see what you're doing. But in the menus and stuff, you're sitting there, like, you're flipping through the costumes, and some of them very much blend into the background, and you're like, okay, well, that's a lot of brown on black. And you're not entirely sure what you're looking at. So I was pleasantly surprised when I actually got into the game and started playing, because there's a lot better contrast. The Mole Men, did they look like rabbits to you? They look like rabbits to me.
They looked like, if you've ever played, what the hell's the name of it? Shit, what the fuck is the name of it? Bunny Lord, the game that he's in, shit, why am I blanking on this?
I don't know, but I suspect that I haven't played it because I've got a blank now too.
It's from Roll 7. I know it's not No Time to Explain, but that's the only game that's coming to mind.
There is a character in No Time to Explain that kind of looks the same.
Well, Bunny Lord, if you're familiar with the game that I am blanking on, Bunny Lord is a purple little mini bunny looking thing running for the mayor of the town. And
yeah,
that's the first thing that I thought of when I saw the little mole men in the game.
They look like little purple bunny dudes. I don't know why. But either way, these little mole men have apparently been judged and found wanting. Because a giant wall of fire is coming for them. And it's up to the mullet man to save them. And he's going to do this by kicking them to safety. When you say it like that, it doesn't sound very safe, does it?
Oh, the game is Not a Hero.
Oh,
that's the one,
yeah,
I'm talking about. Bunny, yeah, Lord, right. And Not a Hero reminds me of what these little mole men look like.
When you were describing it, I was like, I see the character in my head, but I don't know what the fuck that game is.
We cover too much on this show for me to remember everything. Although I love Not a Hero, so I'm embarrassed that I forgot that one.
But, so the goal is literally to kick them from one side of the stage to the other. The stage, you kind of want to describe the game as a side-scroller, but it's not really, because you can move back some, but there is the giant wall of flames that will come after you eventually, and if you go too far back, you're going to get burned up and die, and it'll be sad. You can't save the Mole Men if you're dead. You got to keep Mullet Man alive. I wish he had a better name. He could have the mullet, but he at least needed a name. He could have named him Clyde or something. But you really want to kick the mole men over the obstacles and get them to the other end to safety. There are 8 in each level. And I wish that there was some other way to describe it other than just kick them. The levels start off pretty mundane, and you'll have maybe some little square humps in the ground that you'll want to kick them over. Eventually, though, it starts to ramp up a little bit, and there's more and more obstacles, and there's even some puzzles that you'll have to work your way through to get the moment to safety. For instance, eventually there's a cat lurking in some of the pits, and if you don't kick the mole men over the pit and they fall in, the cat will kill them. Or you'll need to flip a switch to make a bridge. And this is one instance where you can actually go back. You'll have to move forward a couple of scenes to flip the switch so that the bridge comes across and you can jump backward and kick the mole men up onto the bridge so that they can make it safety, but you have to do it fast enough that the flames don't get you or them. You can complete the level and lose your mole men, except for one. As long as you get one to safety, you can carry on to the next level. But if you want to unlock the additional episodes, you've got to save every single mole man in every level of the previous episode. So there's a little bit of difficulty involved here.
Yeah, because some of those later stages, they ramp up pretty quickly.
They do, and the switches and that fucking cat. And that cat will eat your moment, and you're like, well, gotta start all over. You're not going anywhere. It's one of those games that it seems really simple, but they get really creative with the level design later on. And I was surprised and also angry because my mole man kept dying. There's so many ways to remove that, because they can drown. The cat gets them. They can fall into pits. They can sneak into houses. And if you don't kick the house, the mole man doesn't come out. And then they get burned up in the damn houses. And then you're just like, you get to the end and you're like, hey, I made it, I got them all. And then you're like, no, I got 7 out of 8. Fuck you, do it again.
Son of a bitch.
So it's surprisingly difficult. My biggest complaint really is just that the art style can be a little hard on the eyes at times. But otherwise, I was surprised. I don't know that I want to say I'm impressed, but I was surprised. Because I didn't have a lot of hope when the game called Mullet Men and the Mole Men. And you're just like, this is a thing.
But overall, $5 for it. What do you think of it?
For $5, it's definitely worth it. I definitely give it a try. I do think the difficulty on the later stages is kind of a lockout. And it's kind of a bitch to get all of the Mole Men. I wish there was maybe more of a get 75% to go to the next episode or something.
Yeah, that'd
be for those
nice
that didn't want to try hard at it, but still wanted to explore everything. Because it's fucking hard to get them all just so you can go do the next episode.
Yeah. So is it a try at $4.99, or is it cheap enough in your eyes to be a fuck it, why not?
Yeah, I think I could give it a fuck it, why not. I think I could.
I feel like giving a game a fuck it, why not rating works perfectly when the game awards you with an achievement for making a mom joke.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin it, but if you buy the game, you should really read up on what the game is about.
Yeah, I can justify the fuck it, why not here.
Yeah, I agree. It's cheap enough that just pick it up. It's goofy. It's crazy. It's enjoyable. It's an interesting premise. It's like a lemmings where you kick the shit out of the mole men lemmings.
Yeah, pretty much.
That all belong in Not a Hero. But yeah, that is it for this one. This is a fun show.
Yeah, it was.
Matt was an awesome guest, so thanks again to Matt Raethel for coming on. Everyone should check out Hive Jump. Really solid game, really cool stuff. And, yeah, that's it.
That's it. That's the end of the show. We're done. See you next week.
Yep. Music this episode, we're going to play a couple of songs from the Hive Jump soundtrack since I just bought it while we were doing the show.
You know what? We were doing the interview and you asked about if it could be bought. And I was legitimately about to say, stay tuned for the end of the show when he plays the Hive Jump soundtrack. And I didn't. Because I didn't want to be a shithead.
The best part is it's available on Big Giant Circles on his Bandcamp page. I paid $1.11 for it because that's what he is pricing it at.
That's incredible.
So go check out Big Giant Circles on Bandcamp. The link to his page will be in the description, so feel free to browse on down there. Check out all the links for all the games that we covered and the companies and all that other fun stuff. And then look for Big Giant Circles and click on it and go buy his music because he's amazing.
Joe, how much is Half Jump on Steam?
I have no clue. Do I have to look this up now too?
I mean, I can do it real quick. I already had Steam open. $19.99.
Yeah, which is weird because it's more expensive on Steam than it is on console.
Is it? What is it on console? 15? 10. Wow. Yeah. So, buy it on console.
So, yeah. That is it for this show. Thanks again to everyone for coming on and hanging out and chatting. And, Cole, do you have any final words to end the show?
Ice cream cake is delicious.
Perfect.
Look, I didn't say no. I'm getting better here.